Good morning. Welcome to the Portland City Council. We're glad that you're here. We have some special guests that I'd like to introduce. The REAP students. Who's going to be speaking today? Why don't you come on up? And they have been working hard at looking over our draft climate action plan that has been out for public comment. For the past couple of months, almost 3 months, and includes 8 town halls throughout the city. And I know we've asked you to dig into it and give us your thoughts, and we're really pleased that you're here and looking forward to what you have to say. So if you could introduce yourself, and then the floor is yours.
My name is Justice Gibson, and I'm a senior at Grant High School, and I'm also an intern at REAP.
My name is Brittany Brown, and I'm a junior at David Douglas High School, and I'm a part of the REAP program.
Great. Go ahead.
I think in order to achieve the goals of Portland's climate action plan, I think we need to teach to our young people, starting particularly in elementary school, what exactly climate change is and how it's going to affect them in the future and what changes are need to be made. I think they need to understand that climate change is an urgent global challenge, and it's also a dynamic responsibility that has unfortunately come upon us. The sixth objective of Portland's climate action plan is community engagement. And I think if we can implement that into the school's curriculum and also things like the social network sites that we use a lot, we can develop a citywide movement that can develop and flourish. I know a lot of people who know what climate change is, but it still never crosses their mind. And I'm going to be honest with you myself. I always leave the lights on in my room. So I think if we can inculcate our young students that the little things that we can do to save our planet will become social norms for everyone in our society. The future is now, and it's in our hands, and it's in your hands, too. And I also want to thank you guys for allowing us to come speak with you today. We really appreciate this, so thank you very much.
Very well said. Thank you for your testimony. Hi.
As REAP students, we are told time and time again that we are the future. And knowing that, I would like to take part in the process of accomplishing this climate goal by expressing to you how important it is to the youth. With the climate action plan in mind and everybody taking part to help the climate action plan be accomplished, I believe we will accomplish our goal. And as a reward, you will see what you know as your youth turn into successful adults. I believe we should take action now in order to save our future.
Very well said, both of you. Yeah, thank you very much for your testimony, and hope that you'll stay on this issue as we move from draft overarching sort of strategy into implementation. And really appreciate it. Well done today. Give them a round of applause.
Thank you.
Anyone else? All right. All right, the City Council will officially come to order. Today is Wednesday. It's 9:30 a.m. Our morning session on July 29th, 2009. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Can you please read the title for Communications Council Calendar Item 1034?
Request of Daniela Denenberg to address Council regarding single-use plastic bags.
Ms. Denenberg? So this is another key issue under climate change, peak oil, consumerism, all kinds of issues. Good morning. Welcome to City Council. Glad you're here.
Thank you so much. So, City Commissioners, my name is Daniela Denenberg, and I'm representing Leave No Plastic Behind, Surfrider Foundation, and Bag the Bag Coalition. I'm here to request your leadership in banning single-use plastic bags within the city of Portland. This issue might seem really insignificant and small in the scheme of the many issues that you address on a daily basis, and yet it's a big-picture issue that I believe reflects the interconnection between so many other important issues, like marine debris, use of fossil fuels, consumer choice, municipal waste, just to name a few. And this, I believe, is also an issue where we have a choice to do the most good and the least harm. And I'd like you to all just ponder that for a moment, what that would look like, to do the most good and the least harm in this community. And I think it's a really wonderful guiding principle. Just on my way here, I spotted a plastic bag right down on 3rd and Alder going into a storm drain. And I looked at it, and for a moment I thought, I don't have time to pick that up. And then I thought, oh my goodness, this is the issue that I am addressing, one of the many issues that I'm addressing in my personal life. And I bent down to pick it up, and I realized yet again, this ever so cliche idea of addressing choice and making choices on a daily basis. And that to me is a matter of choice. In every moment we have a decision to make. And the same holds true, I believe, for all of us. So I believe a ban that we are requesting is just one part of fixing or addressing this issue. And that's why I believe that education is so crucial. I spent 8 years as a humane educator teaching young people about global ethical issues. And I believe that once education is coupled with providing sustainable choices and critical thinking, which I believe are all tied into this very issue, the power that I witness in those young people to choose differently, like the young people we just saw presenting, is extraordinary. So that's why today I want to voice my support for the mayor's task force in placing an emphasis on educating the public and engaging the public in this issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. Can you please read the title for Council Communications number 1035?
Request of Pete Stauffer to address Council regarding single-use plastic bags.
Good morning, Mr. Stauffer.
Morning.
Welcome to City Council.
Thank you.
We just need your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Members of City Council, my name is Pete Stauffer, and I'm a resident of Southeast Portland. And I'm here representing the Portland chapter of Surfrider Foundation, which is a nonprofit grassroots group focused on protecting our oceans, coasts, and watersheds. And I'm here this morning, like the previous speaker, to ask for your leadership in passing a ban on single-use plastic bags in Portland. I make this request on behalf of our 400 members in the Portland area and also the Ban the Bag Coalition in Portland, which currently includes over 40 different local businesses, conservation groups, and neighborhood associations, and is growing every week. As many of you know, single-use plastic bags impose an unbelievable impact to our environment. Only about 5% of them get recycled, and so that means the rest of them end up in landfills, they end up in the streets of our city, and they end up in the natural environment, where they literally choke wildlife populations and our ocean ecosystems. It's completely unsustainable for a product that's designed to last hundreds of thousands of years to be used for just an hour or so. The good news is that we have an alternative, which is reusable bags. Not only do reusable bags help protect the environment, they actually save money for both the retailer and the consumer. And I think that's a big reason why you see retailers like Fred Meyer, like New Seasons, and others being so proactive in promoting the use of reusable bags. And we really want to applaud the efforts of those businesses. We also want to thank Mayor Sam Adams for your support and your leadership on this issue. Surf Rider is an active participant on the Reusable Bag Task Force, and we strongly support its efforts. It itself, however, is not sufficient. We need a policy to complement that will effectively shift consumer behavior. As a volunteer organization, we've been working hard for about 2 years trying to build understanding and support for such a policy in Portland. Right after me, Staj Pace, who's also with our Portland chapter, is going to be telling you more about the specifics of our education and outreach efforts, including bag giveaways and things like that. And we have a number of petitions that we've presented, over 2,700 collected by citizens around the city, and we've given those to Carla, the council clerk, for your inspection, and also did provide a letter signed by 43 local businesses, conservation groups, and neighborhood associations, a copy for each of you. The bottom line is we think that we have a terrific opportunity here to position Portland as one of the most sustainable cities in the country, and we're here to let you know that there's a growing citizen-based movement in support of that. So thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. Carla, can you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 1036?
Request of Nastasha Pace to address Council regarding single-use plastic bags.
Welcome to City Council. Glad you're here.
Good morning, members of the City Commission. My name is Nastasha Pace. I am also a resident of Southeast Portland, and I am here today on behalf of the Portland chapter and the Surf Rider Foundation and also the Ban the Bag campaign. I am here to formally ask for your support today in the banning of single-use plastic bags in Portland. The members and volunteers of this Portland chapter understand that for this ban to be put into place effectively, there must be community outreach, education, and partnership building. Our goal is to not only advocate for policy, but as our grassroots organization, we are blessed to have many volunteers that are dedicated to building our coalition, educating our message, and gaining understanding and support. The three main ways in which we do this are by holding outreach educational events, or by gaining partnerships with organizations, groups, and companies, and by tabling and canvassing. Earlier this year, to celebrate Earth Day, Keen and the Surf Rider Foundation hosted a Ban the Bag campaign outreach event where researchers from California's Algalita Marine Foundation spoke on behalf of plastics. There was a large turnout, and we thought it was fairly successful. We have partnered with several businesses to display our campaign's educational information and to promote reusable bags. A successful example of this is currently at the Patagonia store in the EcoTrust building. We have one on display there. We have recently partnered with the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods on several reusable bag giveaway opportunities. We donated hundreds of reusable Ban the Bag bags that have gone to the Neighborhood Association's Operation Outreach programs, the Good in the Neighborhood Festival in Northeast, and the Diversity Fest in Selwood. Our volunteers have been tabling for almost two years now, raising awareness on the campaign, gaining support at local concerts, grocery stores, and other community events. Future efforts include Sunday Parkways on August 16th and the Southeast Portland Farmers Market on August 20th. And as a volunteer who's been present at most of these events and organized these efforts, I just have to say there's been a really positive community, positive response from the community. And Portlanders seem to pride themselves on living in this green city, and they want to keep it that way. And I think they're ready to ban the bag. and just want to thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it very much. Carly, can you please read the title for Council Communications Item 1037?
Request of Jason Worcester to address Council regarding Mayor Adams.
Got 3 minutes, first and last name. Right. Thank you.
Welcome to the City Council.
Thank you, members of City Council and the citizens of Portland, for this opportunity to speak today. My name is Jason Worcester. I am the chief petitioner for the community to recall Sam Adams. We as citizens are living in the most incredible city in the world, and yet we're at the most important crossroads we can find ourselves in Portland's democratic history. Do we allow political apathy and fear to dictate our future? Or do we decide that we are the ones who will stand up for a government that serves a community that values integrity, honesty, and transparency? You five represent us, and I do know Portlanders are intelligent, progressive, and inclusive, and they want a leader to respect their ability to make good decisions. They want to trust the information they receive from their leaders and know it's true. I also know the apathetic line, all politicians lie, does not have credence with the citizens of Portland. We love our hometown. And I've heard from many city employees that are afraid to sign on their own time the recall petition or even volunteer. And also, I am deeply concerned that the signing sites we have in small businesses throughout our city are reporting people coming in falsely claiming that they are from the recall election or from the recall campaign to pick up signed petitions. Let's just stop that, all right? Randy, please stop being Sam's mouthpiece. It is not your job. I really do not want to involve state elections on this. Sam, just resign. Do you really need to put our community through this? And how many more news outlets, civic, and business leaders need to call for your resignation or support our recall? Nick, Dan, Amanda, you were elected as leaders to listen to us, not to decide for us with your silence. So now that we know what we know, thanks to many in our community who sought the truth, were courageous to speak, and just want government they can trust, let us all decide, free from deception and negative campaigning, the government that we want. I ask for your support for our right by visiting recallsamadams.com or calling 503-799-7919 to sign the petition, to volunteer to collect signatures, to help in our new campaign office, donate, because together we will make our government better. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor Adams. Jason.
Yes, sir.
Since you mentioned my name, we don't normally respond, but I appreciate you and your background, and I appreciate the things I've read that you hold out as goals. I respect you.
And I respect you as well, sir.
This is my turn to talk.
Yes, sir.
I'm not Sam's mouthpiece. I am not known to be anyone's mouthpiece. I have my hands full controlling my own mouth and my own brain. And I want to assure you of that. So when I talk about this, and I don't want to get spiritual on you, but, and I'm not a regular churchgoer, but my grandmother was. My grandmother started the Church of Spirituality that exists in Salem, and her blood flows through my veins. She very much lived by the parable and taught me, which I try to remember every day, Judge not, lest ye be judged. There but for the grace of God go I, and let ye amongst you who has not sinned cast the first stone. I don't think publicly on this council or any elected official has been more publicly critical of what Sam did to the public, and I've made it clear what he did to me. Sam asked me for his forgiveness, and I gave that to him. I believe Sam in his heart to be an honorable, hardworking, and good man, or I would never open my mouth to say anything in his defense. And I recognize Portlanders will weigh in on this. But I hope you don't misunderstand anything I say as being something Sam has scripted for me or his consultants have scripted for me. They're things I say from my heart. I believe in Sam. I believe he is good for this city. I believe this city needs him. And to the point that that continues, I will say that. To the point that I actually believe he would not be good for the city, I will say that. So I hope we can respect one another without question each other's motives, as I, which I intend to do, be very vocal as part of this entire effort about my perspectives. I work with Sam. He is a colleague, but he's also a dear friend. And I don't have friends that lie, and I don't have friends that cheat, and I don't have friends that steal. I don't have any friends that haven't stretched the bounds of my friendship with them at one time or another. And Sam has certainly done that. But I forgive him for that. And I think most Portlanders in the end will do the same. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's... And if I might just say, that is exactly what the recall is asking for, is for Portlanders to be able to have that opportunity. But also, city employees are fearful to sign the petition. And I need your leadership to let your employees know that in their off time, there will be no political ramification for trying to give us the opportunity to come to the conclusion that you've come to, Commissioner Leonard.
Of course not. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Would you please read the title for Council Communications 1038?
Request of Ivan Zorman to address council regarding discrimination towards the transgender community.
Ivan? All right. Maybe Ivan will show up a little later. That gets us to the time certain at 9:30. We're running a half an hour late.
Do the consent agenda first.
But before we do the time certain, we need to do the consent agenda. Which begins on page one of our agenda today. Is there anyone that wishes to pull any item from the consent agenda? I don't have any noted. All right, Carla, would you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. But that gets us to the 9:30 time certain. Carla, could you please read the title for the 9:30 time certain council calendar item 1039?
Accept Right Brain Initiative Progress Report.
I've got work to do here, don't I? Could our invited speakers please come up? I'm pleased to introduce council calendar item 1039 and recommend its adoption of the Right Brain Initiative Progress Report. This is a city council partnership project, and I want to acknowledge the importance of this effort. This city council began investing in the Right Brain Initiative a couple of years ago, and we are beginning to see real results. The kind of arts education opportunity provided with the Right Brain Initiative is, in many cases, the only arts activity at some of our elementary schools. It's the only arts activity, unfortunately, many of our students receive at many of our elementary schools. The reputation of the Portland metropolitan area as a creative community is growing. It's ironic at that same time that creative learning opportunities for our young people are not keeping pace. We know that not only does arts education offer students the opportunity to express themselves creatively, but it has also been linked to higher academic performance and lower dropout rates. And our public opinion research over the years reveals that the value placed on arts education by the community is higher than the level at which we fund it. The city's partnership in the Right Brain Initiative is powerful because it addresses the regional need for arts education. And I want to underscore, we are a partner in a regional effort throughout the Tri-County area. And it's been an eventful first year for the on-the-ground work of the program, from the development of it to the first end-of-the-year showcase of students' work and art. The early indications show that both students and artists and teachers are discovering the ways of working together to address the student needs, and today we'll have a progress report. It's my pleasure to turn it over to this great group in front of us, who's backed up as well by the Regional Arts and Cultural Council. And I know you give so much of your time and effort and passion to this, and just up front I want to say how much, having watched your work, how much it has inspired me. So thank you for being here today. Who would like to go first?
I'll be happy to. I'm Carol Smith. I chair the Governing Committee for the Right Brain Initiative, and we want to thank you very much for giving us time to be on your agenda today. I know I think you received a copy of our Right Brain Initiative's progress report, our very first one. And what we want to do today is to share with you just some of the high points of that report and look at some of the student work that has resulted from this collaboration with teachers and artists. Incidentally, kind of phasing through your computers right now, you'll see some of the branding work done by the Right Brain Initiative for the Right Brain Initiative by North. And these were created by human right brains ages 5 through 50. As Mayor Adams commented, since this is sometimes in many classrooms the only arts education opportunity for kids, it was really important that as we were developing our vision and purpose that we really think about the responsibility that that really entailed. And as a result, this purpose statement has really guided the design of the program. It emerged from an amazing number of community conversations across the Tri-County area, and also through focus meetings and interviews with school district leaders, artists, and arts organizations across the Tri-County area as well. For me, as a former arts educator and school administrator, one of the key components in terms of the goals had to deal with equity. All students, we hope, will have access to quality experiences in multiple forms of art education, integration being a key component. For me, the word integration is built on the word integrity, which means that it honors not only the core curriculum items, but the additional core curriculum of the arts. And having teachers, artists, art specialists, and other members of a school community working together, this is one of our goals. Obviously, we want students to know about art processes. We want them to know how to create, perform, and exhibit works of art that reflect not only their own work, but the work created by others as well. And because this is an integrated effort, written and oral expression is one way that we're hoping to really impact the education of the students through using arts as a vehicle of support for that literacy. I think it was mentioned earlier about the importance of the community, and as a community-wide effort, it was really important that we saw partnerships as a fundamental to really making the Right Brain Initiative a success. And one of the things that you will see is that the public and private nature of Right Brain is evident in our fundraising efforts. We really appreciate very much the City of Portland, who led the way with us in our 2007 with an initial investment in our planning efforts, which were very extensive. Also in 2008-09, your significant and continued support leveraged, and the leveraging is really important, additional public and new private sector contributions. 54% of our funds came from public sources. School districts' contribution of $15 per student provides funds for direct services to students by artists, and 46% of our funding comes from private sector. We additionally so much appreciate your continued and increased contribution of $200,000 for this fiscal year. I think the governance of our organization and our effort is another example of how we value the partnership. As you can see, the Right Brain Initiative RAC is the managing partner with fiscal and legal oversight for the projects. Appointed by the RAC board is the Right Brain Governing Committee, and we oversee the program, its development, fundraising, and are very heavily involved in the advocacy, of course. We additionally have an advisory council, which really is a broad-based community representation giving input to the governing committee. The staff, the program staff, works to sort of glue all this together, connecting the committees, the leadership committees, with our operating partners. And those operating and partners include an evaluation, a professional development, and an implementation partner. Dr. Denny Palmer-Wolf is our evaluation partner. She's a principal researcher with Wolf Brown, formerly affiliated with both Brown University and Harvard University, Project Zero, an unbelievable talent that has given us much wisdom as we've moved forward. In our professional development, which is a key component where teachers and artists are trained to really work together, work and play well together, I might add, is Deb Brosco. We know well from her leadership in arts education in our region, but now she is a leader in arts education through the Kennedy Center. And Young Audience is our implementation partner, obviously really well known in our region for their outstanding work in schools. We have an unbelievable number of community volunteers, estimate over 1,000 hours of volunteer hours just in this past year. You can see also in our partnership that we are tri-county. We're involving four school districts, lots of schools, lots of arts and organizations, but more importantly, and the focus of it is over 9,000 students. We want to see this grow and include every child K-8 in the Tri-County area. You can see that currently in our pilot year, we had four school districts participate. One of our key participants, of course, with Portland Public Schools. And you can see that really Portland Public, we really tried to reach out to all corners of the city. Over 3,000 students being served in the Portland Public School District. I'd like to invite now Marna Stalkup, who's our project director, to tell you a little bit more. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Carol. Thank you. We did a survey at the very beginning of the year with our evaluation partner, Denny Palmer-Wolf, who helped us really see what teachers were thinking and feeling about this, and it really reinforced that focus. Our focus on literacy is really key and very appropriate. We heard from superintendents early on in the year that this is the direction they wanted to go. The survey of teachers verified that. Some of the data from that survey indicates that 63% of the teachers surveyed cover all academic subject areas, and 26% are reading or literacy specialists. So the majority of the teachers responding have this area of responsibility in their work. In addition, teachers told us that they value the arts. They have high levels of interest in the arts, indicated by their own participation or support of family members who are engaged in the arts, but also that their preparation for arts integration was really lacking. That preparation would have maybe been informal and not high-level college coursework that would prepare them for this work. So not surprisingly then, they told us also that high-quality professional development experiences to support this work in arts integration were their top priority. So we have done that. We have had as a major part of what we are doing in our work on professional development. We held sessions in the fall and the winter with teachers and with artists. And the year ended with a fantastic three-day summer institute where we brought them together with national and local presenters and workshop leaders. And it was really valuable for all of them. I think that this diagram really demonstrates visually what it is we are looking to do and what much of our professional development has been focused on, and that is the understanding of the relationship and the equal importance of the arts, literacy, and other content areas, and where they come together is really about arts integration. So that has been the focus of our work, and particularly in professional development. I'd just like to mention that we're viewing literacy at this time as an enhanced view of literacy. It's not just the traditional reading, writing, speaking, and listening, but also other modes of communication that the visual and performing arts bring to the table. And a testimony to the work that we're doing from a teacher at the end of our first professional development is really beginning to see the importance of educating the whole child through this quote. So now we want to take just a quick look at a couple of examples of how this is manifested in the school setting. We'll first want to look at how we structured this. We established school arts planning teams in each school that requires that a principal, a specialist, ideally an arts specialist if there is one in the school, and two teachers would participate and be the conduit for the initiative to the school and their planning. And they also had the opportunity to work with an arts integration facilitator that the initiative provided to their school, assigned to their school, to really move through these four important pieces to identify learning goals at the school. So it starts from where the students are, that help them select artist collaborators that make the most sense for that work, guide them through the co-planning with those artists, and then along the way examine the impact on student learning. A specific example comes from Hayhurst Elementary here in Southwest Portland. The work that happened here was in conjunction with Julie Keefe, a photographer well known in our community. And Julie was invited to be part of what the school had labeled Poet Pourri, which occurred in April, and they spent much of the year focusing on poetry throughout the school. So Julie became a part of that work with classroom teachers. The work sample that we have is from a second grade classroom. Barbara Iverson is the teacher, and this is Ani's pre-writing sample. You can see not a surprising piece of work from a second grader. Fun to sled in the snow, fun to do some angels in the snow, perfect to make snowmen, perfect to make cookies. That's what winter is. So along with Julie's work, she showed the students really how perspective plays out both in the art form of photography and also in writing by introducing them to a snake's eye view, a squirrel's eye view, and a bird's eye view and how that changes. She asked them to choose one color that they could demonstrate these various perspectives and then arm them with a manual Pentax camera, took them out into the school surroundings, and the students chose six photos, along the way being taught about metaphors and similes and figurative language. They read poems by other children and a classic work of poetry from Mary O'Neill, Hailstones and Halibut Bones. That's tough to say. Following this work, then, the post-sample that Ani wrote is, you can see the impact on this work and this experience she had. Green is bushes to hide behind. Green is grass to bury your feet in. Green is many peas. Green welcomes people to the front door. Green welcomes spring to the earth and our homes. So clearly an impact on the work that this student engaged in.
That's very good.
Yes. So another example, and just another quick example that we want to demonstrate the regional nature of this work, we have invited a third grade classroom teacher from Free Orchards Elementary in Hillsboro, Abigail Harvey. We'll talk a bit about the experience that students at her school had that is different from this experience. So Abby?
Good morning. Thank you. You're not exactly the third graders that I'm used to speaking with, so pardon my nerves.
You'd be surprised.
That's what I've heard. That's what I've heard.
What you've heard?
So again, my name is Abigail Harvey, and I'm a third grade teacher at Free Orchards Elementary School in Hillsboro, Oregon. And this last year was our first year open. And we were, again, a first year school, Title I, which means high poverty, second language, being Spanish primarily in our school as well. There's a lot of pressure to teach the basics and drive home the standards and meet AYP standards with our testing results in the spring. I'll be completely honest with you. I was speaking with ladies this morning, and, you know, they were asking me for my experience. And not only was I part of the Right Brain Initiative Committee in our building, and having the opportunity then to attend different seminars that were put on by the Right Brain Initiative, but also a teacher in the classroom who's concerned about meeting those standards and who sees yet another thing added to our plate when we're already under so much pressure to meet these numbers that are being driven home to us constantly. However, the Right Brain Initiative worked side by side with us and really worked hard, along with Annie Stecker, the artist in our building, to help us integrate literacy into the art that we were doing and helped us see that through the art that we were doing and the reading and writing that we were already doing in our classrooms, we could integrate the art activities that were expected from this whole initiative and asked of us. It was an amazing opportunity for our students to get hands-on. In different levels. Not all students in our building were able to touch the clay and be a part of the end result of handling the clay that went into our mural that now hangs in our entrance. but all students had an opportunity to partake in the process at one point or another. The Right Brain Initiative also helped support our goal of having a presentation that was school-wide and community-wide to our parents and other community members, our volunteers in our school, that was presented in both Spanish and English. So not only were there writing opportunities, there were also performance opportunities and artistic opportunities with hands-on painting, sketching, clay, those sorts of things as well.
Don't you wish you were in Abigail's third grade classroom? We're looking forward to moving into the next year, 2009-10. We have certainly have some new goals and additional ways we hope to grow and influence our students in our community. We are certainly hoping to grow the number of schools by at least three or four a year. We want to increase the visibility and further development of Right Brain website and social media as a way to kind of reach out into the community. Of course, establishing partnerships, which is one of our guidelines, not just beyond in our local area, but into the national level. We're currently pursuing NEA funding in a relationship with the Kennedy Center. We are also growing and increasing corporate individual major donations from gift givers and establishing really a grassroots campaign around that effort. We are wanting to build on our first year baseline data to, again, continue to document the progress. As a former school principal, that's one of the things that is really important to me, is to see that we are really truly making a difference in the educational outcome amongst our students. And I think this is a pattern that really is going to prove very, very impactful. And we are looking for your continued support. And should you be interested, you could meet Annie and her puppet, Mr. Cake, with his big pink brain on our YouTube. So you have to go searching the Right Brain Initiative and meet Mr. Cake. You'll love it.
Great, Mr. Cake.
So I don't know if there are any questions that we might address, anything that's been raised. We'd be happy to if there's a moment or two.
What's been the – a lot of planning went into this up front. Based on that planning, sort of what's been the biggest surprise, either – on the challenging side of the ledger, biggest challenge that you hadn't anticipated, and sort of the biggest success, or, you know, the biggest positive that you hadn't necessarily anticipated up front in the planning?
Well, I think the answer could be both. And that is, initially, this was sort of a frightening agenda that came forward in this community. There was nervousness on the part of artists and arts organizations around the cannibalizing funding, for example, why do we need to do this? We're already doing great programs. So there was some potential nervousness around that. And as Abigail mentioned, too, on the school side, we're already doing so much. How can we do more? And I think as we move forward and bringing those two stakeholders really together, artists and teachers, beginning to understand the power of this and how this work is different and really supporting what they already do and taking it further, I think we've gained some real support and some real friends across the board. So,
Carla, can you turn the video back on? Anybody else?
I had a question. This sounds great. I'm just trying to understand. I was visiting some elementary schools in the spring, Woodlawn. I'm not Woodlawn, but Glencoe and James John and Woodlawn, mm-hmm. or Whitman. I'm sorry, Whitman, which I saw were on your mm-hmm. schools. Yes. Is the Right Brain Initiative and the Artists in Residence program the same thing, or is there a difference?
Well, there are, and we young audiences. I don't know if you're referring to young audiences. They do many, many residencies. Support those in the community, and other arts organizations provide residencies.
Well, yeah, I'm talking about, you know, there's an artist there who's
yes.
helping kids.
That we do, yes.
Pound up tiles and make murals and stuff like that.
That's right. The school identifies who that artist is that will go in, and we're really trying to take it beyond a traditional residency model and extend that learning over time. The school would identify an artist based on their learning goals that they have for their school, who makes the most sense, who could help us achieve this. And then they work out the details of when they come in, who they work with, and what that work results in. And along the way, they both collect documentation of student work. So that's.
And you help identify the artist?
Yes, right? We have an arts integration facilitator that coaches the school through this whole process and provides support both on the artist side and on the school side to begin to see that as one view and one experience.
Thanks.
Just to add a little comment there, if I might, too. I talked recently, in fact, this morning, with one of the artists who has done, you know, a traditional type residency versus a right-brained initiative residency. And one of the comments there, if I might paraphrase her thinking, is that they, you know, the right brain is so infused with working with the administrators, with working with the teachers, that there is this collaborative, yes, we're all going to do this, versus so often, and this is not always the case, but so often, I was a school arts performer for 10 years as well. You know, you would come into a school and you're just sort of, you know, the cold turkey, come in, do it, and then leave. But this total buy-in by administrative, by the school districts, the training for the teachers, and I really stress the evaluation component truly makes this unique.
Thank you.
Thank you all very, very much. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Has anyone signed up to testify?
I believe that's all who signed up.
Does anyone wishes to testify that did not sign up? Carla, can you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Well, thank you for this progress report. It sounds like you've accomplished a lot in a year or two, and we want to continue to help you do well in hopefully every school district in the region. Aye.
Fritz?
I'm very impressed with the science of this approach as well as the arts. And I have three children who went through Portland Public Schools, and two of them take after me are more scientists. One takes after their father and is more of an artist. I was really impressed with how arts education helped my scientist sons to do better in all of their schoolwork. And one of the schools that was on your list for last year was Markham Elementary, which was our neighborhood school. And I wanted to mention that after Measure 5 passed, that was the year after that was the year my first son started at Markham. And for 10 years, I was a parent there. And it was the parents and the teachers who kept arts in the schools. We'd run for the arts, the young audiences. Sue Lau, a very gifted parent who donated a lot of her time. Mm-hmm. And it was really meaningful. And so I know that a lot of parents in our society right now are very worried about the cuts that are coming up. And it seems like since Measure 5, we've had such a problem with school funding. And so I urge those parents to hang in there and do what you can to get through. I applaud you for your help and your initiative in making this region-wide, not just even city-wide. It's really important that we continue to do this. And it shows the commitment of everyone in our society for our public schools. So as parents are thinking about where they're going to send their kids to kindergarten, they should take note of this and realize that our whole society is working together to make sure that our public schools continue to be among the best in the nation. Aye.
Fish.
Carol and team, thank you for an excellent presentation. And we've been getting some interesting reports recently to take advantage of new technology and creative types helping delay. This one takes the cake, so thank you. I have the great honor of serving on the Oregon Cultural Trust, and something that strikes me about your report is that you list at page 15 all the contributing, participating organizations. And it's an honor roll of organizations that we also fund at the Cultural Trust level. But I want to just, note that one of the places at Cultural Trust funding where you get extra points is if you show how the grant to your organization will benefit the local community beyond simply, allowing you to stage a new production or whatever. We give points if you say you're going to take it across the state, you're going to take it into the schools, you're going to make it available to people that can't afford access to arts and the like. So I hope that our formula enhances what you're doing by creating further incentives for these groups to choose to come into the schools and partner with you. And we can talk more about that as we go forward. To Eloise Damrosch and everyone at RAC, thanks for all your leadership and great work. And like Amanda, I have a personal experience in that I have two children in public schools. One is a rising junior and the other one is a rising kindergartner. So as the prospective beneficiary of a program designed to take us back to the future and give my children what their father enjoyed, which was the expectation that arts was part of our curriculum and not some add-on, I thank you for your service. Aye.
Leonard?
It's interesting. My art of choice is music. I love a variety of music, from the classics to blues to what I call hard rock and roll, also known as The Doors or ZZ Top. But when I was a college student, I used to find that it was easier for me to study if I listened to classical music, even though it wasn't my first choice of music. And for some reason, it led me to do some reading about that. And there was a study that was done a number of decades back that showed that people who studied while listening in, not to just to all classical music, but the era known as Baroque music, actually retained information better. And they actually set up, as part of this analysis, plants near speakers. And they would play rock and roll, and the plants would actually grow away from the speakers, which was disheartening to me. And they would play various kinds of music. But when they played only Baroque classical music, the plants actually grew to the speakers and around the speakers, which I think really gets to your efforts, which is arts aren't necessarily just a form of aesthetic pleasure or necessarily a way for one to relax. It actually improves how we think and it improves how we learn. And I have read your report. I agree with it very much and appreciate that you have taken this on as a cause. And I will do whatever I need to do to help you do that. Aye.
Adams.
Well, as usual, my colleagues have said it far better than I can, and I do want to underscore the fact that in tough budget times, they continue to fund this program, and that the good, positive, encouraging words that you've heard from them today have been backed up with the resources. So I want to give them all the credit on this score because they've got lots and lots of competition for resources. I also very quickly want to thank the contributors, other contributors for 08-09, including Multnomah County, Clackamas County, the Oregon Arts Commission, Hillsborough Arts and Cultural Council, the Collins Foundations, the Miller Foundations, the Schnitzer Foundation, PG Foundation, U.S. Bank Foundation, the Oregon Community Foundation, Spirit Mountain Community Fund, Bank of America, the Standard, Genentech, the school districts of Gresham, Barlow, Hillsborough, North Clackamas, Portland Public Schools, and in-kind major contributions from North Creative, the Portland Center for the Performing Arts, Tonkin Torp, McGurn Video Media, Video Media, Heathman Hotel, and Laser Quick. I also would like to thank Jennifer Yoakum and Polly Berg for my staff. Thank you all very much. I vote aye. All right, we're going to do the 10 o'clock time certain, and then for those of you that are waiting, unless there's any objection from council, we're going to hear after the 10 o'clock time certain council calendar item 1071 regarding LT2 issues, but we're going to first consider, and Carla, would you please read the title for the 10 o'clock time certain council calendar item 1040.
Approve the designation of 12 trees as Portland Heritage Trees.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor and colleagues, this presentation was originally scheduled for about a month ago, and because of the dense calendar that we had, it was postponed until today. I've asked Michael McCloskey to come forward. He is the chair of the city's Heritage Tree Nominating Committee and a member of the Urban Forestry Commission. Now, the Urban Forestry Commission knows well that trees add so much to our livability here in Portland. They provide a range of environmental benefits, including cleaning our air and our water, reducing our home heating and cooling costs, and sequestering carbon dioxide to help moderate climate change. Trees also beautify our urban environment, gracing public and private properties within Portland with a rich showcase of sizes, shapes, and forms. As recommended by the Urban Forestry Commission, each year, City Council considers certain trees within the city for a special heritage tree status. This designation is based on the tree's, quote, age, size, type, historical association, and horticultural value. That's quite a mouthful. Upon approval, these trees will be added to an existing list of 283 heritage trees, which currently represent over 108 different species. Michael McCloskey is before us today to recommend that 12 specific trees within Portland be added to this list of those with special heritage tree status. And these recommendations are based on the deliberations of the Heritage Tree Nominating Committee. In addition to Michael, I'd like to thank the rest of the nominating committee, who have spent countless hours of their time researching and refining the list which will be presented before us today. And they include the Urban Forestry Commissioners John Warner, Diana Shervey, and Stephen Peacock, former Commissioner Ed Washington, and Parks employees Dan Moeller, Joe Hintz, and Dave McAllister. Michael, welcome, and the mic is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Fish. I appreciate the opportunity to make this presentation to you. This is the product of last year's field work that our group did. We have 12 trees to present to you today. They are at 11 different sites. And as Mr. Fish said, they've been approved both by our Heritage Tree Committee and unanimously by the full Urban Forestry Commission. In looking at the five bases for recommending the trees be added to our system, and looking at the set that we have before us, seven of them qualify because of their type, three qualify because of their historical value, two because of their horticultural value, two because of their age, and one because of its size, among other things. In four cases, a new species would be added to our system. In those cases involving types of trees already in our system, the proposed additions compare well with those already in the system. Four of the 11 sites involve native species. Six of the 11 are on public land. Five are on private property. In those cases, the property owners have approved these proposals and given their consent. In the if one looks at the distribution of these proposed additions throughout the city, seven of them are in southeast Portland. Two are in northeast, one is in northwest, and one is in southwest. And when there are types of trees involved that are already in our system, often in this set, these trees that we propose are new in that part of the city. Now, let's look at the individual trees, if we may. I'll quickly run through a series of slides and offer a few observations about each of them. The ginkgo tree is before you. It's in the backyard of John Miller in southeast Portland, but it can be seen from an adjacent park, and it compares well with the ginkgos now in our system, but it would be the first in this part of Portland. I should have said northeast rather than southeast. Next, this Camperdown elm is in the front yard of a house owned by William Jones in Ladd's Addition in southeast Portland. It's a fine example of this type of tree, and it is important because it can be easily seen by the public. Our one other example of this type of tree cannot be easily seen by the public close up, only at a distance. Next. These are crepe myrtles. They're in front of the Van Veen Nursery in southeast Franklin. We're recommending the center one and the most northerly of the three be designated as heritage trees. They would be the first of their type in our system. The ones we're recommending were the first two hybrids of their type, introduced in Portland from the National Arboretum to test their resistance to mildew. Next, this is a yellow bellflower apple tree in the southwest part of the city. It's historically important, as well as the first of its type in our system. It's the remnant of an old orchard, and it's very old. It is thought to have originated from a sapling brought across the Oregon Trail in 1847 by Llewelling. It's been widely recognized by the Orchard Home Society and just recently by the state of Oregon and added to their heritage tree system. I was there to help dedicate it for them this spring. Next. This is an osmanthus tree. It was transplanted into the Chinese garden from southeast Portland when the garden was set up. It's in the corner of the first courtyard.